Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, producer Jonah Primo here, and welcome to Principle of Charity, where we inject curiosity and generosity back into our conversations on big social issues. This is part two of our conversation on Christianity versus Islam with guests Professor Muhammad Abdallah and Professor Robin Horner. Here Lloyd will do his best to push them and find out what they really think. And if you missed part one with Emil, I really encourage you to press pause, go back, and have a listen, as it will contextualize some of the conversation you're about to hear. Otherwise, here is On the Couch.
Robin and Muhammad, I'm going to, as we always do on the show on the principle of charity, part of our focus is an attempt to reduce polarization through critical thinking. It is to try and promote at least a view of the alternative, and in so doing, promote an open-mindedness. What we're also trying to do on the principle of charity is create a learning environment that is safe. So the first question to you, Robin, and I'll throw the same question to Muhammad in a moment, is what would your top three arguments be in favor of someone choosing Islam over Christianity?
One of the things that strikes me about Islam is that in many ways it's a religious tradition that takes love of God seriously. And I would give the example of Ramadan and the fasting that Muslims undertake during Ramadan, which is an extraordinarily difficult ask, I think, much more difficult than what Catholics might do during Lent. So I'd say, you know, the attractiveness of the people who are prepared to go to that extent of fasting is one of the things that I would say shows the very deep-rooted and genuine belief that people have in Islam. Secondly, theologically, you know, if you were going to invent a religion, you wouldn't have a trinity, would you? It's just so hard to explain. So Islam, in its thinking of God, although Christianity thinks of God as one, Islam not having to worry about how to talk about that differentiation of God as three would be a lot easier. And thirdly, what I really liked is Muhammad, straight up front, spoke about how important it is that we don't think of Allah having gender. And that's the case also in Christianity. But, you know, I've been on another radio show where, you know, it was argued that you had to call God he, and I just find that really problematic. So I think just, you know, from this morning, that capacity to affirm that God is transcendent, that God is not limited in the way that humans are limited, is really beautiful.
Thank you, Robin. That was superb. Muhammad, I'm going to throw the same question to you, and that is, what would your top three arguments be in favor of someone choosing Christianity over Islam?
Well, thank you very much for that. Number one, as the Quran recognizes, it tells us that, and you shall find among many Christians those who are humble. So humility is a distinguishing mark of Christianity and many of the Christians, and this is a testimony of the Quran itself. So that's one. Secondly, the emphasis on love. I think that is very important. And it seems to me that the emphasis on love is unconditional to a great extent, which is also important. And thirdly, the ability to work with others, broadly speaking, or be inclusive, if you like. They're inclusive at the religious and cultural level. Historically, this was also true in the Islamic civilization Islamic civilization would not have expanded and became influential without the works of the Christian translators right at the outset. And so the ability of Christians in the past and the present to work with other communities and the kindness and the love they show is outstanding, and it is enviable.
Mm. Okay, wonderful. Thank you. When you were speaking to Emil, what struck me with both of you was not just your sort of intellectual ability to explain the key concepts and the philosophy of both of your religions, but actually the commitment to them at a experiential and personal level. Let me test this, though, with you. While I feel that commitment, let me again go back to the principle of charity and the notion of critical thinking. Robin, and I'll start with you. What beliefs in Christianity are you the least certain about?
It's not so much core beliefs of Christianity that I have anxiety about. It's sometimes the ways in which those are interpreted or not interpreted in particular contexts. And so I'd say, for example, the very hard and definite borders that sometimes people put around, well, in the contemporary times, issues to do with sexuality or with gender, all of those sorts of questions are very important for the people that I work with. I work with teachers who work with young people, and those things are kind of life or death for them. And so what I find hardest, well, is to find that there are some very strict and harsh interpretations that I think perhaps need to be talked about some more.
Okay. Mohammed, how about you? Which areas of the faith are you less certain about, of your faith? Or of Islam, let's call it that way. Yeah.
Yeah, well, thank you. I think I am not uncertain about anything in my faith, Islam, but about maybe if we talk about Muslim practice, it's a different, I think I'd like to distinguish between my convictions about my faith are very strong. I don't have any uncertainties, but I think I do have concerns about practices of Islam and manifestations of Islam. Take, for example, any form of extremist, radical, violent manifestations of Islam are highly problematic for me, right? Or any interpretations of Islam that are not inclusive at the cultural level are highly problematic for me. Or any interpretation of Islam and the practice of Islam that does not take the context into consideration is problematic for me. So that these are areas that, or even when disagreeing with somebody because of their beliefs or practices is one thing, but then to exclude them or become harsh towards them or not to extend to them compassion and mercy and empathy is also something that I find problematic. Mm.
And Mohammed, on that, I mean, it is a big focus of our show. We in one sense want to give disagreement a better name. What do you think is happening in Islam, to your point, in some parts of it where disagreement doesn't have a good name? Meaning people just feel like they need to be extremely dogmatic or fundamentalist.
That is a problem, and it's not contemporary. It has happened throughout history that interpretation or a disagreement, rather, leads to conflict, sadly. However, it's reassuring to know that historically speaking, mainstream moderate Islam always overcomes that any forms of extremist interpretations. And case in point, historically, one of the most extreme movements which disagreed with mainstream Islam was known as the Khawarij movement and Mu'tazila, who were purely rationalist or believed that reason is above revelation. And today they are the most peaceful, most pacifist of Muslim communities, and they reside in Oman, you know. And so with the passage of time, historically, it one can demonstrate that, yes, these disagreements are highly problematic, but with the passage of time, because of a very strong scholarship foundation, mainstream Islam always seems to weed out, if you like, some of those extremist manifestations.
And Robin, for you, disagreement in the Catholic Church, how much does the church actually tolerate? And I suppose sometimes when people split off from the church, meaning a reformist movement, they feel that the church can't tolerate that disagreement, hence they need to split off. What's the brand of disagreement in the Catholic Church?
Very good question, because I think where there is disagreement in the Catholic Church, there are some parts that are, some small, actually, segments of the church that are incredibly loud and vocal. Catholic Church, in fact, is a very broad tradition. And evidently there are dogmatic statements that emerge from the magisterium that we theologians talk a lot about to try and understand what they mean. And so there are points, disagreement over which would result in people being estranged, finding themselves estranged from the church. At the moment, and really I'm talking politics here, but at the moment we have Pope Francis. And Pope Francis, it seems to me, is trying to undo that kind of very hard attitude towards disagreement that perhaps characterised the papacies of John Paul and Benedict. I think Francis is a lot more open to the possibility that people can disagree, but that need not destroy the fundamental faith that that joins them. For example, Pope Francis has recently acted to say, look, I think the Latin Mass, which is a kind of a movement in the church of people wanting to go back to the Latin Mass and have very kind of a rigid kind of expression of Catholicism, he's actually moved to say, look, I think it's important that this isn't allowed to just run freely, because it does actually undermine the kind of dialogue that we can have in the contemporary world. So he's more open to dialogue. Certainly there are points at which, you know, if one was to deny that Jesus was the Son of God, for example, one would be placing oneself outside the Catholic tradition. But Francis, for all that he's done, he has said of homosexuality, look, who am I to judge? Or he talks about the pressures that are on families, married people, all of those sorts of things where there are lots of potential moral tensions. He really tries to open those up for dialogue, and I think that's good.
When it comes to disagreement, and I sort of just interested in your view, the sexual abuse scandal in the Catholic scandal, the sexual abuse that did occur in the Catholic Church, when you reflect on it now, is there disagreement of how it was conducted, meaning the investigations, the insights about how the Catholic Church dealt with it? How much disagreement actually exists in the culture of the Catholic Church on it was dealt with?
Yeah, I think there's two kind of fundamental trajectories, I think, in this way. One is that, sexual abuse happened and we're all very sorry about it and we'll make sure it doesn't happen again. There's that kind of approach that doesn't reflect on the deeper kind of systemic causes for the sexual abuse crisis, which I would say partly lie in a culture of clericalism, for example.
Right, right. It's a more tactical response to what happened rather than a deeper leadership view of what really went wrong.
Yeah. And I would say that many lay people and some ordained people, many lay people would say this is fundamentally a patriarchal cultural problem that we need to address. You know, the sexual abuse itself is a manifestation of the depth and the awfulness of this problem. Okay. So there's some people, I think, who kind of would just, well, let's go on business as usual. We didn't notice it and we're sorry. Yeah. But I think others would think about it more deeply.
When I listen to both of you, you both embody, probably in a way that Emil and I don't even, hence, you know, on the principle of charity. I mean, we're both trying to be charitable, but we have to try, it seems, a lot harder than both of you. But let me focus on the shadow part of yourself. And Mohammed, I'll start with you. What situations make you the least charitable?
Yeah, I think arrogance. I think if a person comes across as very arrogant, and ostentatious or haughty, disparaging of others, then I that might put me off from being charitable, you know, despite the fact that, you know, the teachings would tell me otherwise. But yeah, if there's one thing that really would put me off is a sense of arrogance and haughtiness, and to have a sense of a supremacist attitude towards others. That is probably one instance.
Okay, thank you. Robin, how about you?
There's a long shadow behind me.
As there is with all of us.
One would be intellectually, I find very, very dogmatic positions. And this morning I've just been thinking about the evangelical right in the States and the possibility of Donald Trump being reelected. I find myself very uncharitable when I think about that, or when I hear about, you know, big companies and corporations being able to get away with horrible things that they've done to people, and you know, individuals in the robo-debt scandal, you know, being persecuted. Those sorts of things overcome my sort of capacity to dialogue. But I think personally too, I'm a real introvert. And so for me, I'm good at the thinking, but when I'm out there with people, you know, to really love the God in the face of the stranger, I find really hard because I'm nervous about that encounter with people. Somebody asked me recently, I was overseas, and somebody came to me and asked me if I'd take them for a cup of coffee. And I said no, because I was just anxious about the encounter. And then later I thought, you know, I should have just taken that person to the coffee shop, and I should have done that, but I find that really hard to do, just kind of the personality that I am.
So I'm interested, Mohammed, you were speaking, and I think Robin sort of agreed, but I want to come back to just your comment, which made so much sense to me, about how a cultural or social context can overlay choices around religion. And I'm going to give both of you maybe a thought experiment on this one. You both reside in a democratic country, and yes, there would be lots of imperfections to democracy in Australia, but there is choice, there's availability. It is a society that attempts to emphasize tolerance. And yes, there's lots of areas where Australian society is extremely prejudicial and intolerant. But are you both products of this type of system? I mean, if I put you both in an alternative society where there was not a democracy but an authoritarian regime, Mohammed, would your religious beliefs be very different?
That's an excellent question. You know, the foundations of my religious beliefs that speak to me about the way I behave now and conduct myself, they should be the same wherever I am. But I think there is a good possibility that I may perhaps conduct myself either intellectually or otherwise, maybe in a different way if I was in a less open, less democratic nation. If I, for example, I was in a, you know, autocratic or a society where freedom of speech is not allowed or is curtailed, then I might not be able to express the ideas and the thoughts about certain interpretations of Islam that I would do in Australia. So no doubt. So no doubt we are the product of our society. No doubt that the foundational tenets and teachings of Islam shape who I am, but also I have been molded, if you like, in a way to interpret my understanding of Islam in ways that are consistent with the context in which I live in. And case in point, I teach a class for young students aged 10 to 15, a module called Islam Culture and Identity, in fact. And I try to, when I ask them how they identify themselves, they always deny the Australianness, and they're born here. And when we, you know, we dig deeper, we find that they're only focusing on the negative about Australia. And so I try to help them say, well, look at the concept of justice, for example. Yes, Australia is not perfect, but you can find more justice in Australia than all, if not most, mainstream Muslim societies. You know, we have the institutions, the infrastructures, the ability to fight for what is for your rights in Australia, regardless of the outcome. And so I believe in that. If I was growing up in some other Muslim majority nation, I may not believe in that. So yes, these are definitely.
Thank you. We like to have a game called net positive, net negative. And all you have to do is say net positive, net negative, and very briefly give one or two reasons why. And I know this is instinctive, but are you both up for it?
Sure.
Okay. Robin, I'll start with you. Capitalism, net positive or net negative?
Net positive, but only just.
And why? Very quickly.
Only because of really the democratic systems that are often going along with it, but in fact, capitalism itself.
Okay, good
start. Actually, net negative.
Net negative. Okay, Mohammed, godless do-gooders. Godless do-gooders. Net positive or net negative?
Neutral.
Yeah, that's not the rules of the game. That's not the rules of the principle of charity.
All right. Fine. Well, net positive.
Net positive. Okay, why?
Because they do good. They do good. I mean, that's the ultimate purpose of faith, and that is to do good. As far as their faith, that is between them and God.
Okay. Robin, atheism.
Net positive to the extent that it forces us to raise questions about our own commitments and to more deeply think about why we maintain them.
Okay, good stuff. Mohammed, Charles Darwin.
Net negative.
Why?
Because he stipulated a particular theory that fundamentally goes against what I believe and may have also caused a serious number of consequences that led to secularism and so forth, which I feel have been very harmful to human beings and society at large.
Okay, thank you. Robin, I'm going to put you on the spot. Cardinal Pell.
Well, that really is putting me on the spot.
You're from the Catholic University. You can answer anything.
Yeah, I'm from the Catholic University. I would say negative to the extent that there has been a lot of pressure to go in particular directions in the church, and a lot of work, I think, behind the scenes to kind of press that direction, and I feel that wasn't right.
Okay, Mohammed, cancel culture, but with the comment that it doesn't forgive.
Oh, net negative, definitely.
Why?
We can't cancel people. I think people have the right to express their views. We can disagree with those views, but we should do so with decorum and politeness and etiquettes. But to completely cancel people is to deny who they are.
Robin, lastly, bikinis on Bondi Beach.
They don't suit me.
Okay, we'll take that. I want to keep going, and thank you, both of you, for participating in the net positive, net negative game. I want to go to a little bit going back to Emile's comments around free will, but some of the philosophy. There was a book by Rabbi Kushner on why bad things happen to good people. He was a rabbi who lost his son, I think. I can't remember. His son may have been a teenager. And Robin, why do bad things happen to good people?
A friend of mine was dying of cancer a few years ago, and she struggled a lot with why does it have to happen to me? And in the end, she came around to saying, well, why not me? We don't believe in a God. Well, I don't believe in a God who is listening to some people when they pray for people with cancer and not other people. Essentially, I believe God acts in the world through people and through the love of people. And the world, there's natural disasters and there is evil, and all of those things happen. And I don't think God causes them, but I think they just are, and they are part of what we have to deal with.
Mohammed, I'm going to come back to you on that question as well. Robin, I'm going to give you another difficult question, and that is, if we did a sort of trade-off thought experiment for you, and I said to you, you had to choose one. You have to give up on all scientific findings, as in we know science, peer review articles, some of the medical science, or give up on the Bible. Which one do you choose?
That's an invidious choice. It's actually not a choice.
What would you do?
I would say we've put two things that don't live within the same thought world together, and you can't choose one or the other.
I see. You can't resolve that contradiction.
Well, I don't see it as a contradiction.
That's you just the see thing. Them completely separate, so they're not a contradiction.
Well, I think they're asking different questions in different ways.
Okay.
So, you know, we shouldn't say, well, the Bible gives us all the science we need, because it doesn't. That's not what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, a scientistic view of the world isn't helpful either, because science doesn't actually teach us about love.
Mohammed, how about you? How would you manage that question? What's your response to that question? You have a choice: give up on science or give up on the Quran.
I won't give up on either. They complement each other.
Similar answer.
Okay. Yeah, it was always understood in the Islamic tradition that revelation alone is not sufficient, and intellect alone is not sufficient. Science allows us to arrive at certain conclusions intellectually, which, as Robin said, you know, it may not answer the questions that the Quran answers. So they both go hand in hand and complement one another.
Mm-hmm. And coming back to my initial question, well, one of the first questions to Robin about why do bad things happen to good people, what's the Islamic answer?
Well, there is no one single answer, because we don't know ultimately why bad things may happen to good people, but it could be for various reasons. Generally speaking, the Quran says is that whatever happened is because what your hands brought forward, mischief and corruption has become widespread on earth and sea because of what you have done. That's one. But we can't individually say that you, because of what you have done, this bad has come to you. But we say, generally speaking. But also, sometimes bad things happen to good people to elevate their status in the eyes of God, because He knows they can forbear it. But also, sometimes bad things have to happen to good people so that there could be a wider lesson for other people. So recently, a friend of mine, his son died because of a rare genetic disease. He invested so much and tried to solve to cure him. His son died. And it's only after he died they found that the cure. And it was a simple cure, but we didn't have the technology to cure it then. Mm. But now many other children will be saved because of that test that this person went through.
We always attempt in our show, we have a focus on trying to find the truth. Mohammed, for you, what are the two biggest misconceptions you believe people have of Islam?
That it's a faith that advocates terrorism and violence. That's number one. And that it's a faith that oppresses women. Number two. These are the two most frequent questions that I often ask.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Robin, how about you? Two big misconceptions around Catholicism.
I'd say probably the one that it's all about laws and, you know, being obedient, instead of actually being about accepting the grace of God and experiencing that love. That would be my first one. And I guess the second one would be that it is anti a whole lot of minorities. In fact, you know, there are some people within the tradition that might have reasons to not go along with particular views, but I would say most of the people that I meet want to be open to people who are different from themselves.
That's very interesting. I mean, it's I'll probably end off on this note, but I'd love to get both of your responses. About 2 months ago, I went to an interfaith meeting, and what struck me there, I suppose, the DNA of that meeting was commonality. There was just that. That was the purpose of that meeting, that interfaith meeting. And yet, when I hear sometimes religious people speak, and I wanted to check on this, I often hear a sense of trying to focus on difference. And I'd love to hear, as a concluding comment, maybe from both of you, do you think that's true? And what are each of you doing if you oppose that? What are you doing to reduce that difference?
I think that often when we do interreligious dialogue, we feel that we're trying to come to a position of commonality of, you know, what's similar about the religious traditions and so therefore how we can understand one another better. But I actually feel it's also important to focus on the differences. Mm. Today I have felt, in a sense, closer to Muhammad because of his way of living his religious tradition for the sake of it, you know, than for either of you or for a lot of other people. Mm. You know, I feel there's an inherent kind of connection there. I wouldn't be respectful of Muhammad if I said, so really Islam is just the same as Christianity, it's just got a different name. Mm. There are differences that we must respect, and if we don't recognise those differences, we do a great disservice to one another.
Mm. Very interesting answer. I'd love to carry on, but we're short on time. Muhammad, how about you?
Yeah, not so dissimilar to what Robin said. I believe there are many commonalities, and I have often advocated the idea of interconnectedness between civilizations or civilizations, and that includes religions, of course. We cannot do without the other, absolutely. Commonalities are something that we should focus on, especially in a world that seems so divided and so pitched on a dichotomy of the world of black and white, right and wrong, etc. I think we have a moral obligation. It's a moral imperative that we focus on the commonalities, not to dilute the tradition, but rather to bring people together in a time where we need to bring people together. But as Robin said, that does not mean we make a mixed salad out of all religions and dilute the essential tenets of each religion. We must recognize the differences and do so politely and do so with decorum and be mature enough to discuss differences, yet not focus on those only, but also speak of commonalities. That's where we can bring our common humanity together to help one another.
You know, I have to say, I am feeling in a similar way, Robin, as you said, you were feeling to Muhammad a greater closeness. I'm feeling very close to both of you. In one sense, you probably are better ambassadors to the principle of charity than Emil and I are. We should be getting you to host the show. But just thank you so much for my senses of what you're doing in the world and your ability to have this dialogue with us. I know some of those questions were tricky for you. Thank you for having the spirit to go along with them. And Emil, from you, any comments or any views?
It was just a sort of rare privilege to be able to get into some of these questions, which have long been on my mind, but I've never known who to ask them to. You know, I learned an enormous amount. So I really appreciate both of your time. And I'm sure our audience is going to love it, because for people who are not within a particular religion, we often just hear about other religions through the most fundamentalist examples, through the politics, through the news and actions, but we don't actually get to appreciate the beliefs from the inside. So I hope you guys enjoyed
it. Thank you to both of you.
It was a great opportunity. And thanks, especially Muhammad. I've really enjoyed hearing from you.
Thank you all. Likewise, Robin, I enjoyed hearing from you. Thank you all for hosting us.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed the show, we'd love you to leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. It really goes a long way to helping others discover our conversations. You can also find Principle of Charity on social media, where we hope you'll join the discussion. See you soon.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.